I was so excited to see everyone. I forgot to hit record. So if you're just joining us and watching the replay, we've just kind of checked in. We've just done a little body scan. But we're all met. So, if this is your first call, it may be you've if you're like Mary and Livette and Kate, you've been here since forever. My kind of godmothers of self-belief school. And it may be your first call. But usually what we do here is I give just a little intro of just what's happening and with me and what I'm seeing in the world. And then anyone is invited to share anything that's going on. So you could be bringing something from your life, from your work, from your history, your future self, wherever you're at right now is perfect. Please feel free to bring anything at all to these calls, even if you're like, I don't even think this is related to self-doubt. Because, and the reason I say that is because, and I think you may have heard me say this before, I'm so much more interested in your growth than anything else. And that's really, you know, self-belief schools are kind of a front for that, right? So, my secret mission is to help you fall in love with yourself and your life. To see what I see when I look at you, which, ooh, astonishing. Astonishing. I'm premenstrual, so I always feel very teary, and I've already watched several Instagram videos this morning that have set me off. So you're getting me raw and human. So something I've been thinking about over this last couple of weeks is the concept of home. That's really alive for me at the moment because we are planning this sabbatical, we're calling it a sabbatical, to New Zealand for a couple of years, back to my home country because I live in the UK at the moment. This morning we signed a lease for a house. I might even be able to send you a photo of it, but I'll figure that out. It's very cute. It's just a little villa, and it's right in the center of the sort of beachy village that we're moving to, where Ash's mum lives and his brother lives. So we'll be able to walk everywhere. Very dog friendly. We're very close to two beaches. Bodhi's going to be in seventh heaven. But the thing about the concept of home and the reason why I wanted to share that with you is how that feels to you. Where is home for you? If you live in a country that is different from your country of birth, it's this weird experience where you're sort of split in two places. Your heart belongs to two places. If you've ever kind of traveled for extensive periods, you kind of know, oh, I'm not at home, right? I have a different perspective on my home. There may be a sense that home is a physical place for you, or it may be a feeling. And I think that's the kind of thing that the thing that I've been thinking about is that home for me is really a feeling. There are so many places that I've been lucky enough to travel to where I've thought, oh, this is home. This feels like home. I could live here. Do you do that where you go to real estate agents and just check out, see where you would choose to live? Yeah. But also people, right? My women friends feel like home to me. I feel like I can kind of take my figurative shoes off and stretch out and fold my legs under and share, you know, in a way that feels like home to me. So I wanted to just sort of drop that little pebble in our collective pond and encourage you to think about all the different places in your life that feel like home to you. The conclusion that Ash and I are coming to is it's wherever Bodhi is, wherever we are together, wherever our books are, our art, like the things that actually make a house a home. Those, you know, the external things, that feels important. So the only things we're shipping are a cold selection of books, all our art and pictures and photos, and rugs and throws and too much linen probably. But It's an interesting exercise to go, oh, what actually is going to help us create a home? So I don't know if that lands for you, if that feels interesting to you. I just want to kind of throw it open if anyone wants to share anything around how that feels to you.
Oh,
Yeah,
Seth.
Sharon.
Oh.
Yeah, I think about this a lot actually, because we moved here to South Wales, a place called Mumbles, which is just outside Swansea, which is beautiful. And we moved here 4 years ago, nearly five actually, just before, 2020. February 2020 we moved here. And basically on a bit of a whim, kind of, oh, I want to live by the sea, kind of, work from home can, live anywhere type thing. And I've really struggled to, it's taken such a long time to feel like home. And I quite often think about my old house back in the Midlands. And it was a massive wrench to leave there, it really was. And I often think about, oh, I'd just love to go back and live in that house. But what I've come to realise is that it's not the house, it's what that house represented. So when I think of that house, that was our family home for like 15 years. The kids grew up there, Amy and Ryan were there. We had our other dog, Jen, who was part of the family. Everything that represented, that's what I'm missing and craving. And of course, if I go back there, to that house or any other house in that part of the world, I'm not going to get it. Well, I won't get that. Do you know what I mean? It's an impossible thing, isn't it? And it's taken me a long time to come to terms with. It's not just being in this physical place. I think we were talking about this, weren't we, a couple of weeks ago, about the empty nesting when your kids grow up and all that sort of thing. And it's a different phase of your life. And I think it's that I've really come to terms with. And I'm blaming the physical, oh, I can't settle in this place. And actually, it's not that. It's other things. It's the people and a stage of your life and everything. And yeah. So that makes sense.
It's so interesting as well, Sharon, just that idea that we can't kind of go back to a previous
time. It's awful. It's I'd love my kids to be that age again, they were there every day and I knew where they were and and light. And the fact that they're now, both in their 20s, I can't quite believe, but I still see them as being like 12 and 10, and they're not, it's really weird. It's really weird.
So. Love that so much. Thank you, Sharon.
You're welcome.
And Sarah, and then we'll come back to you, Esther. I know you were starting to speak. Yeah. Sarah, hi.
Hi. This is really interesting. It's really quite live for me, in that I live in a very sweet, Regency terraced house. But we're in a big gas explosion a couple of years ago. And so I was out of the house for a long time. And it was a fatal gas explosion. So one of the people who kind of made it feel home was my friend who lived, one of my best friends who lived next door. And so I've moved back in, and I was interested in what you were saying about the things that make a house a home, because this is, I've lived here for, 14 years, and the attic that I'm in now, I converted after the explosion, and it's charming, but there is no art on the walls. All that. So it's kind of done, but it's not finished. There's no art. And you were saying about Bodhi. I have a lovely little dog who's dying. So it's just, how do you kind of, reconcile that in terms of, for me, maybe it's about how do you find joy in a place? And I'm not entirely certain, but working it through.
I love that so much, because our homes hold all of that, don't they? Like all of the emotion and the love that is you know, that we put into the beings that live there. Our homes hold that, so they become this really precious container for all the memories that you've had with your little dog, and even reconciling coming back to a home that must have been incredibly traumatizing and terrifying to have had a gas explosion happen. But to almost have to, I imagine, tell me where I'm wrong, but I imagine forgive the house for putting you through that in some way.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. It is about forgiving the house. And I've always had a kind of really deep connection to this house. Mm-hmm. And there was a, you know, I remember someone saying to me, oh, it's almost like you're the guardian of the house. Mm-hmm. But I'm stuck here now. No one's going to buy, you know, no one's going to buy my house because next door's still a bomb site. And, you know, it's I think we talked about that, haven't we, Sass? So it's all this, you know, I have worked on it, but it's not there yet. So it's just keep working. You know, there is a wreath on the door this year, which, you know,
because it's a form of unconditional love, really, isn't it? And I love this house, even though that room's a mess, or I really want to paint that, or, you know, like at the moment we're surrounded by boxes in a couple of rooms, and it's driving me a bit mad. Can I love the house even though? There's a lovely philosopher, Thomas Mann, I think it is, who talks about our homes representing our internal psychology. So if you describe your least favorite space in your home and your favorite space in your home, you may see parallels with how you feel about yourself, the parts that you love and the parts that you find. I'm just thinking out loud of, you know, I don't like the spare room because it feels cluttered, and it feels I can't move around in it very freely. I don't want anyone to come and stay. And when I think about when I feel overwhelmed and cluttered and I can't move freely, then my personal response is to retreat. I want to hide, right? So it's quite a funny little connection that can happen there. Yeah. Yeah. Love that, Sarah. Love the idea of you finding some art for yourself for Christmas, for your attic.
It's in boxes, Sass. It's next to me. There are just boxes upon boxes of art. This house is just full of boxes. The insurance company packed everything up and everything is still boxed.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. Esther, what came up for you?
Hi, Sass. Hi, everyone. Firstly, wow, congratulations, Sass, signing a lease. That's exciting. This is just such a rich topic for me. I am from Australia originally, but have lived in the UK for 23 years now, and in different forms, owned a home, renting at the moment, have lived abroad from here as well. And similar to you around that thought of what makes a home for me, husband, art, books. But really, I've been thinking I've thought for a long time that I'm very adaptable and home isn't necessarily a place, but I am also premenstrual and probably will cry. It's not unusual for me though. It's just a good excuse for today. My dad died this year. My mum is 81 and she's okay. My in-laws, we just visited, and you know, you don't know, but the thought that's relevant to this conversation is when they're all gone, and kind of like thinking about what Sharon was saying, like, and even Sarah, like this sense of actual physical home, I think have been very grounded to the two places that were the family homes. And it's like I said to my husband, I feel like I will have no center. And it was really funny to me to think that I didn't need a place, but actually in the thought that those places won't exist, I actually felt quite ungrounded. And It's not a bad thing. It was just, you know, it just made me realize like how we can think we're fine and, you know, yes, I'm very carefree and I don't need a home, but actually sometimes there is a place that grounds you that you don't realize until it's something that you can see not having in future. But I mean, there's not really a question or an answer there. It was just something that I've been thinking about a lot.
Yeah, I so understand that. That sense of connection to like a rootedness almost. Yeah.
And where people come together and it's like, what will this look like for our siblings on both sides when you don't have that central meeting point?
It's I think that's the bit, isn't it? When we lose people, when we lose beings from our families, and that is a real loss, right? Where there are memories and meals and connections and celebrations that take place with those people. We're not just often grieving the person, but grieving the role they played in connecting us.
Absolutely. An amazing apple pie. And, you know, and I found myself doing that in my trip with my in-laws, like collecting recipes. And not that I will probably, I mean, I don't even try and make my mother-in-law's apple pie. I have my own recipe because I'm like, you'll never replicate it. But it's a tangible piece of her, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we're coming up to the 20th anniversary of losing my mum, and I just have to cook her ginger cake, and I'm right back in my childhood, you know, experience of watching her bake this very rich, sticky ginger cake, and it's the smell of it that just gets me, you know, every time. Yeah, food is a massive part of our memories of home and how we relate to each other. We gather around food. Yeah.
And actually, if you think about that, when you set up somewhere in a new home, you usually bring your own like food with you, like in the sense that you create the food that you had in another space.
Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing topic. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm going to go off and have a little clean up.
Nice. Perfect. You're perfect. Love it. Thank you. Anka.
Hi, I don't know if I have been here. So I'm Anka and I'm in Northern Germany. And I have maybe a little bit different story to add, because you all shared something from like homing. And I always have identified more as a nomad, like wherever I am, there's home. And you all can relate maybe in some way. Because we also crave it a little bit from traveling, you know, having our hotel room or our little apartment someplace where we usually don't live. And then that's our home there. But the home in the far, that's kind of was always close to my heart. And I'm living now right where I've been born. Like I moved back after years in lots of places and also years in the US and stuff to my parents, into my parents' house. Like I'm here in the living room. Like that's our kind of yoga room, my office thing, which was the living room when I was growing up. So it's kind of, and below are my parents who are in their 80s, and we are here because we are supporting them. And any moment it can go, because if they can't live here anymore, then we will go. So it's kind of a very funny situation. It's home. It has been the first home of my life, but also I always kind of wanted to get away, and I did get away, and I'm back home. So it's very tangible what makes home home. And also it's a really good feeling to not need a place to be my home, because I have made many places home, which I think you all have just experienced in some way or another also. So it's just a very interesting sensation and experience. Also being back in Germany, in the German culture, which I always wanted to get away from. And now I am experiencing the benefits of it. I love the Christmas markets. We were just walking to the market. We were walking shopping this morning. Hardly believable in the US or many other places. So it's just like lots of things that are very homey. And also when I walk, and when I lived in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and I walked shopping, it felt homey to me. But it was in the high desert of New Mexico. So but the walking to shopping, or the going for walks in the evening, or like all these activities that are where I've been growing up normal, like sitting on a bench, like in the US, there are not many benches, but sitting someplace on a bench felt like home a little bit. So yeah, I wanted to add that.
I love that so much. You know, I met an Australian friend actually while I was traveling, Heidi, and she was totally a nomad. She was like a trader, but she worked online 10 years ago when it was, I couldn't even imagine that you could have a, you know, you could have a job that meant you could live anywhere. And I can remember talking to her about that nomadic life and feeling really anxious for her. Like, but you don't even know where you're going to be in 3 months, you know? And she's like, yeah, it's great, isn't it? And yeah, I couldn't conceive of it. It's so interesting, isn't it? How we either, you know, our sense of safety is either the freedom or the rootedness, you know, that both can, that roots or wings kind of people, we can have either that really drive us. Yeah, so fascinating.
Maybe I just add one piece, because that's, I love this element. Like, I just remember the first 7 years of my adult life, I've been a musician. So I have been, like, for many of us, also music makes home, right? Like, mm-hmm. having the art, you know, whichever that is, like, but yeah, music was part of it. And I was part of making music in different places where people came for Christmas concerts or for whatever. And that has helped me to get out of my house to do work someplace else for 7 years. And wherever we showed up, we were a group of like six musicians, wherever we showed up for other people, that made a little home for them. So even working location independent can be accumulating like other people around that, because every year we come back at a certain time or so. There are many ways how we can work where there is an element of home, or like I work with old people also, where I go to their homes. But also when I worked in the hospital as a nurse, they came to the hospital, and that was kind of the little bit of home we had because we knew each other, something like that.
Yeah. Gosh, that's fascinating. Love it so much. Yeah, Anne.
Yeah, just to kind of echo what Anka was saying, I think for me, I've travelled a lot, but also lived in a lot of places through work. But I've been here in this house with my husband for 8 years now. And before that, lived in a house for 11 years. But before that, travelled a lot. And I think the things that make home, I always think about, is it hygge? I never know how to say this. Hygge. Yeah. I always think about that, and that like kind of creating that. So music, food, candles, warmth, fire, that kind of thing. So wherever I've lived, I've always wanted to create that coziness that I think hygge is about. And yeah. That for me is home. And I think what you were saying about family and friends and people and having those kind of communities and actually so my parents are family home. My mum had a sudden stroke a long time ago now, well 10 years ago, and that meant that our family home that we'd grown up in wasn't suitable for mum and dad anymore, so they had to move. And I watched my mum particularly go through a really difficult time with that. She really struggled because they moved village as well, and actually just moving village was a massive thing for her. She still doesn't like the village where she lives, which is only two villages away from where she was. But actually we've created that sense of home again for her and with her and my dad, and they're 91 now. So so I think you have to kind of just think about what creates it for you. It's and it isn't bricks and mortar typically for me. It's about the people that you're with, whether that be friends or family, and also creating that kind of community with food and music and
yeah,
and that coziness.
Love it. Love it so much. I imagine your home's very cozy, Anne. That's yeah. So lovely. Yeah.
My log burner is one of the most important things, particularly right now in the UK.
Same. I'm having a relationship with our log burner. Our new home does not has one heater in one room because New Zealand isn't great with the whole central heating situation.
Yeah. Thank God for log burners.
Yeah. And I imagine that those of us who really are really attached to the cozy factor of home, you're lamp people or you're big light people, right? So, you know, the coziness thing is lamps all the way. I don't understand people who turn the, my husband does this, just walks into a room and turns the big light on. I'm like, what, am I going to be interrogated? What's happening? This is horrible. Yeah. Yeah, love it so much. Love it so much. What a rich chat. I'm so glad this resonated for you. And what I'll do is follow up with, I'll find out who, I'm pretty sure it was Thomas Mann, but I'll follow that up because it's quite a fun process to think about, you know, your internal psychology and the rooms in your house. So I'll make sure that gets out to you. Yeah, hate big lights. Love my wood burner, Sharon. I love that so much. So clear. Who's bringing something today? Who has a question or was looking to ask something, maybe about the program itself or something that's going on for you in your life right now? Something you want to celebrate related to your self-belief? Everyone is totally fine. Nothing is going wrong in your life. I love it so much. Esther.
I just didn't want to take up all the air in the room.
Oh, I love that.
So I know, like, doing the Bravehearts work with you around the business stuff. So, but just for context, I work in as a communications consultant doing like big change projects, and I've been just doing lots of little projects in this last year because, you know, my dad died, my best friend died, like it's just been a really one of those, it's not been a bad year, it's just been a hard year, that's just, it's life, and it just felt easier to do smaller stuff and then I could travel home and things. But I really really wanted to land a really big client that I could do some consistent work with for at least 12 to 24 months, and I've just done that, and it's great, everyone's really nice, I'm in the exciting first stage of, you know, I love the whole strategy and planning piece, but this is what happens to me. I could do a sell with, and I'm really, really good at my job. I know it's always weird to say that. People always like, but I am really, really good at my job. And I love it when people own that they're good at their job. But it's not what I want to do. This is meant to be a stepping stone. The next 2 years, having some security of knowing I've got this client with, you know, subject to change because we don't know what's coming in the world. And that I kind of get the work in good shape and down to 3 or 4 days a week. And then I have you know, some freedom in terms of finance and time to just be like, okay, this is now where I want to start focusing my other attention. And I guess the question is, like, I know there's part of me that puts a huge amount of work in, and it's pride. Like, I'm, you know, I've worked for myself in this kind of work for 13 years now. And I know you're kind of only as ever as good as your last project, you know, and that I get work from word of mouth. I haven't interviewed or given my CV to anyone in years, and I'm really fortunate in that sense. So there is an element that's like, I take pride in my work and I want to do a good job. But with this new knowledge that I'm attaining through Bravehearts and here, I also wonder how much of me is giving a lot, because it's a great way to protect myself from actually going off and doing the things I want to do if I'm really busy with the consulting work. And I guess I'm just trying to think, like, how do I start to push back? Because this is what happens, isn't it? You know, we all do this. We do really great work and then everyone goes, oh, well, I'm going to give you more work because, you know, that's the reward for good work. And I want to think about how I protect that space, but not from a but from with this knowledge of like, okay, Esther, this is not just about protecting your time and boundaries, but also trying to move through the world in a different way that is acknowledging the fact that it's easy to say yes as a way to protect myself from doing other things. Does that make sense?
Totally. Yeah. How many of us have thought, hang on, I think I might be saying yes to stuff and it's suiting everyone else, but I'm not sure it now, you know, it doesn't seem to align now with what I want. And then there is tension.
Mm.
And there's usually, tell me where I'm wrong, Esther, but it feels like there might be two places of tension here. One is like your relationship with no, right? And actually saying that word out loud is a full sentence. and how that sort of feels, what you make that mean, the relationship with the people that you're saying no to, what happens there, how you manage that. So there is that. Right, there is that no, and then or that source of tension, and then there is the other source of tension of what you're saying yes to. Right, if you say no and you create this space, what then are you going to say yes to for, to build the business that you want to have, that you're moving towards? And the tension of, oh, now I've got the space, I've got no, you know, I've got no noble excuse. I'm really doing amazing. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That sounds about right.
That sounds definitely right. I mean, I'm so much better than I used to be about setting boundaries and just saying no and not explaining why I only want to work 3 days a week, you know, for a client. I'm much, much better at it. But I think because I've got that initial, like, oh my God, I've just started.
Yeah.
Can I already start saying no in my second week type thing? There is definitely the tension there. Right. For sure. And I don't, you know, I don't like doing it. But I think with, like I say, this, you're right, you've hit the nail on the head, this bigger piece of knowledge, which is, this is what you always do, and understanding I do it to protect myself, actually makes saying no even scarier now, because it's not just about me being like professional and keeping boundaries, and, you know, it's almost, I can feel it in my, I know the thought that's going in my head, well, why do you get to do this? Like, that's exactly what, I hadn't verbalized it until then, but that is exactly what's going on in my head. Like, there are, you know, I mean, I only have to spend 5 minutes on LinkedIn and nearly everyone in my industry is struggling right now. Like, it's just a shit show out there. And I've just asked for my highest day rate and got it. And so I'm piling guilt on myself too. It's like, well, and yeah, that's the thing that's in my head. Well, why do you get to do this? You should just be really happy that you have a really healthy consulting business. But I know that's not what I want.
Well, and, you know, when I think about this through through the lens of our, like, self-belief school model, right, what you're describing is a protective pattern called the martyr, right, which is, it's driven by the belief, I don't matter as much as you, which we learn, we just kind of digest and metabolize that from all the messages that basically tell us, you don't matter as much as other people. So how else could we possibly see the world other than that, if that's the message we've always got, or the conclusion we've always drawn? So that martyr protective pattern, right, is really seductive then, because there is a huge payoff to it. We get to feel needed. We get all the validation. Oh my goodness, thank you. Oh, have you met Esther? She's amazing. Pay her a day rate, she's top of her game, right? All of this lovely validation, which feels so good to us, right? We feel needed, we feel important, we feel significant, feel like we're contributing. And there's a huge payoff to that. Let's not deny that. What can also happen, though, is that we then stop prioritizing what we want and we sort of replace it with what everyone wants from us. Sounding familiar?
Yeah. Oh, my God. And that's the pattern I'm really trying not to fall back into this time. Like, I mean, that whole martyr thing is, I mean, I can, and I'm thinking, in the last few months. I guess I don't know, maybe it's just because of this year, I've almost stepped back and been observing myself. Has anyone else kind of found themselves in that position when they're going through life and it's not, you don't feel disengaged from yourself, but it's almost like you're on the outside looking at how you move through life? And that has been my experience this year. And I think about the times that I've been triggered this year, and it's because someone is doing something. They're just part of me celebrating it, and part of like, well, yeah, well, I don't get to do that because X, Y, and Z. And it's just, yeah, it's been a real shock to me, actually, because I'm like, oh, my God, I didn't realize I was like that. Do you know what I mean? But also, what is this telling me? So I can definitely, that mark.
And does that, what you're describing, is that sort of a bit of resentment?
Yes, a bit, probably a lot.
Yeah. which is a massive part of that protective pattern, right? Because, you know, and it, I think what it's telling you, my hunch would be, all of your needs are being shoved to the bottom of the pile.
Oh, yeah. When I look at the things that I wanted to get done this year, and I think this came up in Brave Hearts, it's like, I can make time for everyone else. And in fact, something I did on the weekend, which it sounds so silly, but to me it was huge, was I sat down on Friday night and I wrote down a list of things that I had to get done over the weekend. You know, return this, pick up this, do that, clean the bathroom. Like, and then I woke up Saturday morning and I was like, when did you actually just sit down to write? Because I love to write. And I thought, fuck the to-do list. I can do all of those things in little work breaks throughout next week, and I can just take that 3 hours that I was going to do it. Now, that is a huge thing for me, like, because I was saying, you know what, this is important to me. And it's not, I mean, I'm child-free by choice. I don't even have, I mean, I barely have a plant at the moment. My husband is more than capable of going off and looking after himself. In fact, he loves it. Man time, great. So it's not like I have anything else stopping me except for me.
Which but in some ways it can be more irritating, right?
Yeah, there was a lot of standing back observing this year, yeah. Going, woman, what are you doing?
Well, and I think this is the thing to really pay attention to, is you already know what happens when you say yes to stuff you don't really want to do because you're worried about what you might lose, right? What's at risk if I don't say yes, right? You already kind of know that you can get yourself into that situation and you can predict the outcome because you've lived it for a long time, right? Yeah. So you've got this lovely opportunity to just try some new things. Experiment. I'm a huge fan of experimenting. Mm-hmm. Not the same as goals, right? It's just, let's try something new and see what happens. It's a genuine experiment. Let's write a to-do list and then burn it and decide, I'm just going to do this thing today because that's different, right? Yeah. And you know, you're collecting data. The data is, how does it feel when I try something new? What information do I get from the world when I show up differently?
Yeah.
Does that feel okay?
Yeah, so, no, it does. Yeah. And I think this is kind of along the theme of some advice you gave in my last post on the Brave Hearts, which is, you know, just small simple steps. It doesn't have to be a complete transformation. It's and I think really that's probably where that whole idea to just, you know, throw out the to-do list on the weekend and do something else came from. It was like, well, this is what I always do. I make myself busy, so what could I do differently? So I think you're right, it's bringing that into my work.
And I guess that's the thing to really recognize is, to me, we can't really change the protective pattern from the same energy that created it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? So, you know, for me, that martyring pattern, we can't sort of, we can't change that from the energy of being a martyr.
Yeah.
We've got to move somewhere different. We've got to try another, you know, another part of ourselves needs to be leading at that point.
Well, that makes so much sense. I feel that in my way. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Otherwise, you end up sort of replicating it in a parody of the thing, you know? It's quite odd. So for me, we move around the self-belief coaching model. We move down to self-worth, to the warrior energy, right? So the martyr is a kind of shadow of self-acceptance, of lover energy, which is really supportive, right? It's like, I belong to me and I'm connecting to other people, and it's a really, you know, it's from a really authentic place. I'm doing it because I really bloody want to. Right. No, there's no room for resentment in that.
Yeah.
When that tips into resentment, tips into I'm giving too much, I'm not belonging to myself, I'm putting myself underneath someone else, you know, I don't matter as much as you, then we tip into that martyr pattern.
Yeah.
And so to move out of it, we move around the circle, we move around the compass, and we get to warrior energy.
Right.
Now, for me, warrior is associated with earth, right? It's pretty grounded. And I always think about the warrior as like putting a staff in the ground and drawing a line, right? It's like, this is my territory. Self-worth is about, you know, advocating for yourself, for your needs. It's very action-oriented because you can't really have self-worth and not do anything.
Yes.
Sometimes the way into that is anger, because there's a sort of injustice.
Yeah.
It's like a little doorway. So just paying attention to, what are the lines in the sand I want to draw here? What are my boundaries? I highly recommend going into the growing self-worth module and just playing with that. There's an exercise in there called the Warrior Garden, which I'd really love to do one-on-one with coaching clients. And all you're doing is just imagining that sort of metaphoric boundary around you and what's okay and what's not okay. And you just write it down for yourself. All the things that are okay and not okay around, you can do it in a specific context. So you could do it for this new contract. What's okay and what's not okay.
Oh, I love that.
And then what you're doing is doing that next step from the observation is you're actually bringing it into reality. You've got a piece of paper then with it written on, and you get to then decide. There's some good info in there around how I sort of propose that we see boundaries, which is not ultimatums. We're not trying to make anyone else do anything or think anything different, because that's a highway to nothing. Instead, it's like, when you do this, I'm going to do this to take care of me.
Yep.
So when you ask me to stay late or do an extra project, I'm going to say, I just need a week to see if that can be accommodated.
Oh, I love that. Oh, yeah, that really resonates too, just bringing this practice into work. And I love the idea of what's okay and what's not okay. And I love that too, that experimenting with just saying to people, I need more time to decide, because so much of my work is about looking at a project and I can't tell people. I mean, and I did this time, they wanted me 2 days a week and I was like, I need like 6 weeks full time before I can even scope out what you need, like for something this massive. If you want me to do that 2 days a week, it's not going to happen. So it's not like I can't, but I think, yeah, I'm just in that new kind of phase. So this is really helpful. Thank you, Sass. That's great.
You're so welcome.
For listening.
Well, and I'd also just really want to affirm the fact that you have said this to them already. Like, I can't just come in and work 2 days a week and you get your project magically, you know, whipped up. I've got to come in and do 6 weeks of scoping and strategy, and then we'll figure it out, right?
Yeah.
When you're doing that, just know you are teaching them how to treat you.
Yeah.
We do that to everyone in our lives, right? As soon as we say, got no boundaries, yep. As soon as you ask something of me, I'm going to go, yeah, of course, let me do it. Then people come to expect that from you.
Yeah, that's true. It's true, because I've got very strong boundaries of family and friends. So it's just bringing it in more into here and, excuse me, more into... Yeah, that part of me that just wants to like use work as an excuse not to do the other things I really want to do.
Well, that might be something we look at next time, right? Where are your, you know, and so now you're getting good at saying no, and then you're creating the space.
Yeah.
And then we can look at oh, and what's that bringing up for you, yeah. right? Because there's layers and layers and layers to this yeah. shit.
Yeah, that sounds like a great first start, though. Thank you so much.
Yeah,
you're so love it, layers and layers.
I love it, Esther. Yeah.
Thank you, and thanks, everyone, for listening.
So good. Everyone can relate, right? Yeah. Anne, I saw your hand pop up.
Yeah, so I was just really listening to that, and thank you, Esther, for sharing. It's really, really, you know, just great, the richness that you get from just listening to other people and stuff. I was just thinking, because I guess my thing at the moment is I think I'm kind of in the bystander a little bit with so I've got my courage-based goal and my plan from the Braveheart stuff, and I've done the easy stuff, and I've not moved out of that circle really.
Right.
And it's taken me a while to do that, and there's a couple of things that I could do that I'm kind of holding off on and things. So I was just interested in what you said around moving around the circle, and I've done some of the modules and I've looked at some, but I hadn't really picked that up. So I guess for me then it would be moving into that self-belief. Is that how it works?
So, and a great question to ask your bystander, that protective pattern, is, well, why? Why am I doing this? How is this connected to a bigger vision for my work, for my business, for my life? Like, what's the values behind it?
Yeah. And I think that's the issue for me, is that I currently haven't given myself enough time to think that through. And so I don't have that. So, you know, I've always worked in a strategic role, and I've always kind of worked in organization where there's been a strategy, and I've contributed, so I can do strategy, I know how to do it, but it's interesting, I can't seem to step into that for myself. And so that's the bit, so I'm really in the kind of bystander at the moment, and well, I think that's where I need to do the work.
And that sounds so fun, right? Because it's like, oh, hang on, I'm going to use my bystander to stop me from figuring out why this matters, right? And that's so it's a sophisticated old bystander you've got there, Anne.
Yeah.
Right. So let's not like try and boil the ocean and get you a nice strategic plan, right? Yeah. Tell me, what is it about your business that you are excited about?
So I think two things: that opportunity to be my authentic self.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of moved into HR roles where actually it's all about doing tough stuff and leading tough stuff. And actually what I'm really about is leading with kindness and compassion wanting people to be the best they can be, and making work, helping people to make work better for themselves.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of not, and that's what I want to step into. So whether that's in HR consultancy or whether that's in my coaching, that's really what I want.
Love it.
Oh, wow.
Look at you. So you've named probably three really key values there for you. Something about advocacy for well-being at work, something about compassion, something about freedom, maybe. These all sound like values that matter.
Freedom's because I felt really constrained in the last few years by both the work that I've done and some of the people that I've worked with, and so taking the decision to leave my job in the summer was about creating that freedom for myself.
Nice. Love it. So I'm so glad I hit record in the end, because now you can go back and listen to yourself.
I need to do that, because I'm trying to write them down while I talk. But I will do that. Thank you.
And so tell me about one of the tasks that you're holding back on, the one that you're going, oh, I think I'm bystandering around this.
So I think it's a big goal rather than a task.
Mm.
So in my head, I want to create a first stab at a coaching program that I can share with the world, that I can go out and talk to people about, because that's how I want to build my, so the HR work is fine. I've got some work and more work will come, and probably a bit like Esther, I'm kind of, I have to pay the bills, so I will take, I will create boundaries around what work out, and already that feels okay. So that awesome. Feels okay. It's this, yeah. it's the coaching and how do I, because in a bit like I want over time for that. So that seesaw will be HR work and coaching, and then right. I want to move it like that. Yeah. But I've got to kind of take those steps.
Yeah.
And I guess it's just taking that first step.
Well, so you want to create, so is your courage-based plan about creating this new course? Yes. Yeah, right. Yeah. Fab. So I love the coherence here, and it's really cool. Like you've obviously got access to a really resourced part of you that's like, all right, let's crack on. This is what yeah. we've got to do, right? So amazing. So tell me a little bit about, you said you'd done the easy tasks, and then there was expanding out from that. There were some things that you were holding back on.
Yeah.
Can you tell us just maybe one or two of those tasks?
Yeah. So just writing down a plan, a yeah. coaching, you know, a 6-week program. Yeah. And then the other one, testing that out with some people.
Cool. Okay. So these, both of these tasks that you've got in your courage-based plan could be courage-based goals on their own.
Yeah.
Just okay. want to point that out, right?
Yeah.
That you're probably used to seeing something like that as a task rather than a whole goal.
Yeah.
And like I suspect that you're a pretty go-getter, high achiever typey person.
So yeah, and I guess lived in that world for so long where it's do it, do it, do it.
Yeah, yeah. And what we know, right? What we know is that the things that actually matter to you, compassion, well-being in your work,
yeah,
and freedom.
Yeah.
So what I would love to give you as a little bit of homework is to think about what is the way that I can bring those values into one of those tasks.
Okay.
So it sounds like the first one is probably about creating the course, or at least a straw person of the course, right?
Yeah.
So maybe it's about treating that as quite a big goal, right? That could take, if you're anything like me, Christ, it took me 10 years to create Self-Belief School. I'm not for a moment suggesting it's going to take that long.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying that's based on iterating all the time, yeah. right? So one of the things to do, to look at, is what's the easiest first step here?
Yeah.
Right? How can I bring some compassion for myself, some yeah. freedom for myself, and some well-being at work for myself into creating this course? It might yeah. mean it takes a bit longer. Might mean you get a bit creative and fun with it. I always find colored pens are yeah. a great place to start, right? Like, let it be quite creative and fun and
yeah,
all of that stuff, rather than, because you're in this place of letting go of the corporate HRE thing, identity, where you were told this is what you need to do, and it's usually not fun stuff, and yeah. you're trying on this new identity, which is, and the coach who actually wants people to enjoy their work and be aligned with work because it feeds them and helps them feel good.
Yeah. Right?
So just be, you know, you can offer yourself some compassion as you're trying this stuff on. But it's yeah. that thing, I think, of it's hard to create something from the same energy that you're trying to leave.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Does that kind of help you, Anne?
Yeah, I think so. I think yeah. so. It's a deep groove. You know, that thing about yeah. grooves in your brain, it's a deep yeah. groove around got to deliver it now. And that's really interesting. So, yeah, I think so. I think that's something I'd like to
yeah.
reflect on more.
Yeah, And just know, right, like your bystander is always going to be looking to know more before you can start.
Yeah.
Right, that's where it will feel safe.
Yeah.
If I know more, then I won't screw up.
Yeah.
I won't make a fool of myself. I won't, you know, do the wrong thing.
Yeah.
And your healthy adult self is the part of you that's like, oh no, we know enough. We've been doing this for decades. It's okay. It's okay to not know everything.
Yeah.
What can we do today to move this forward? Right?
Yeah.
So notice, like, even the idea of coming up with some values that can support you, like the vision part of this, of self-belief. Why do this? It's a choice, right? So why are you choosing it?
Yeah.
Actually, your healthy adult self was very clear. This is about these three values. Yeah. There might be some more, but that's a good enough start point.
Yeah. Interesting. Thank you. Yeah.
So fun. Love it.
Thank you.
Really cool. Hey, Sarah.
Hi. I just wanted to say, Anne, there is a somewhere or other I've got myths about writing that sort of resonate with some of that, in terms of, you know, one of the myths about writing, particularly for a PhD, is I need to know it all before I can write it, which is not true at all. So if you wanted me to dig those out, if it would be helpful, I'm happy to see if I can find them. But it is more about writing than anything else.
Well, and I think what you're saying is so true, though, Sarah, that whole idea of I need to know everything before I can write the PhD, when the whole purpose of a PhD is to figure it out as you're
Absolutely.
Going.
Writing is a creative action. And so you produce something new through the process of writing. You don't have to know it to produce it. Something magical happens in the writing.
Yeah. I always talk about being in relationship with the thing. Right. So whatever it is you're, you know, aiming for, whether it's creating a course or writing a PhD or something else, be in relationship with it, because that will evolve and develop over time. You'll come to know more about yourself, about the topic, about the thing. All of it will morph and change over time. The thing to not do is to go, oh, too hard, don't know enough, I'm going to stop.
All my drawers need to be clean before I can do this.
That's right. That's my perfect. I've got laundry to do. I cannot be doing that. Yeah.
Mine's not clean.
I've sorted my office space.
Yeah.
And that's been my thing.
Yeah.
That's amazing. The procrastination fairy.
Yeah. Love it.
Yeah, all art must be hung.
Yes, Mary, that's so true. All the art must be hung. Sarah, that's your homework.
Dear God. Is there time for me to just ask something else?
Of course.
Okay. Yes. So I think in a non-organisational setting, there's just something for me going on at the moment around how deeply entrenched negative beliefs. And I know you talk about, self-doubt, but actually I don't have any doubts. I know these things are true. There's no doubt in my mind about them.
Love it so much. The news, you're just reporting the news.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. And I guess it's for me, so this is a bit outing. So at the moment I'm doing some quite intensive therapy around this traumatic event, you know, so if you live through a big explosion, it's very bizarre. But actually, a lot of the stuff that's coming up is not about, so yes, bangs and sirens, etc., are, you know, viscerally evoking of something, but actually a lot of the stuff that's coming up is something to do with negative beliefs. Right. It's something that is around these deeply entrenched beliefs, and I can get to, because I've done a lot of work on myself over the years, the stuff actually that's around the stuff that's come from the female lineage. I saw a really lovely clip from a poem, you know, a few lines from a poem this week, which was, I come from a legacy of women who were raised to be useful rather than joyful. And I would add in holy, useful and holy rather than joyful. And I can kind of get, so all that stuff, you know, the things that I can bring up are very much around the stuff that came from my, the female lineage. But I think there is other stuff there that actually is paternal, and I can't get hold of it. And it's, so my question is, how do you get hold of those things that are that are there, that are creating this, that, but you can't, you know what I mean? It's so entrenched.
So I guess a supplementary question from me would be, what use would that serve?
Getting hold of it.
Yeah.
Because it feels like it's sort of almost trapped and in there, and there's no getting hold of it. You know, to me, all the work that's happened over the years, or my work so far on myself, has not got to that. So I can talk really articulately around the other stuff, you know, so we could mask it all. And at the core is something else there that I can't get hold of it right now.
Yeah. So I would just offer, Sarah, that you're well practiced in understanding and knowing the negative beliefs themselves, right? It sounds like you've got those down, and you can talk about them, and it's very it's clear and articulate, and it's like reporting the news. And I'm interested in what would happen if you decided you weren't going to tell those stories anymore.
I don't think there's a story. I think it is just, it's a kernel of truth. There's no, you know what I mean? There's no story. It just is.
Well, and so part of this isn't about denying or in any way minimizing or gaslighting yourself, even, you know, into believing something that isn't true, right? I was raised by women who were taught to be useful and holy. Fact. That can be a context, right? And then you could, so that can be true. And how do you want to live?
Yeah,
right. It's that shift from I'm going to keep telling that story.
I think for me,
sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no. I think you're right, and I completely agree with you. I think there is some work to be done around that and those stories, and the fact that I can talk about them and it can produce sort of resentment, etc., etc. So that kind of female lineage stuff, I think, is really important. The kernel, though, I don't think has come from that.
Yeah,
I think it's. I think it's.
And it may be that it may be you're absolutely right, and it's kind of buried quite deep, and it doesn't come up until you're 83.
God.
Still doesn't mean or doesn't prevent you from having a joyous life full of the things that make you wild and free, rather than holy and useful. Right? Like you get to do that. Because what I'm just thinking about is one of the concepts of self-worth is we talk about our kind of primary resources, our energy, our money, and our time, right? And how we advocate for those. And if you did a little audit on yourself around how much time you spent, how much energy and time you spent working on the old stuff versus creating the new, right? That might be an interesting audit to go for. Just to know, oh, no wonder this feels like it's true and new and relevant, even though I am a healthy adult human and I can make new choices and I do not have to live the life of my mother, my grandmother, my great-grandmother, my aunts, my sisters. I get to choose. Right, just shifting that sort of direction, right, into what do I want to create rather than what am I consuming from the past, and help make a real shift for you, I suspect. And this is a great place to play with it, right? You can show up to these calls and go, right, I'm going to try on Joyful Sarah, but no idea who the fuck she is. Right? And we can figure that out. Like, you're not alone in this. You're not alone in this. Yeah.
Thanks.
Might be interesting, Sarah, one of the exercises in growing self-acceptance is about this concept called the love bus. And it's about looking at all the different parts of you, from your past, from your future, all the different selves that you've kind of got going on inside you. And you can kind of do this creatively. You can draw it. You can put all the parts of you on the bus. But the idea is you then start to think, oh, what are the parts I'm trying to leave by the side of the road? Who's driving? Does that feel good to me? Who needs to be down the back of the bus? Because actually, you know, you're not contributing to the navigation of where we're going, right? So you get to use that metaphor as a way of kind of drawing out the parts of you that would support you in your life right now. It might just be a fun way to explore this.
Thank you.
How does that sound?
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, the kernel that comes from the patriarchal line, maybe that will pop up on your 83rd birthday as a little present.
Oh, God, I hope it comes sooner.
Love it. Love the question. Thank you. Livette.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, Sarah, I don't know you, but I think we're like kindred, because I love the sinking down work has been so rich. And for me, I've had to do a lot of that, just from my own story, and just really echo what Sass is talking about with everybody on the bus. Concept of accepting parts of yourself, to me it even starts to sink to this place of self-compassion and allowing those parts to come forth when they're ready. There's almost like a ripening that it needs to kind of gently come to a head, although listening to the way that you speak and your strong intellect, I just really resonate with your personality and viewpoint, because I also want to, I'm like, I feel you in there. Come on out. Come here. I want to look at you. Which is for me, maybe not for you, but for me, and those parts are like, no, I'm good. I need more softness before I need more love and self-compassion before I come out. So for me, in syncing with those places, I've started to become pretty good at it, until I find some new ones that are tougher, maybe. But that gentle self-compassion and sinking down and just letting those parts know, you know, when you're ready, I'm here and I'll listen to you and we'll see what the integration of you is like. That's just kind of, it's like a whole nother little journey piece. So I don't know. I just wanted to say that.
Knowing you both as I do, which is not a huge amount, but I can totally see a kindred spirit for both of you and each other. Yeah. Yeah. Super smart, wild and lovely woman. Awesome. Yeah. This has been so fun, folks. I hope this has enriched your morning, or your very early morning for some of you, or your evening. And yeah, I'm hoping you're taking something away that helps you feel into that home that's within you as well, just to bring it full circle back to the start. So look, take care of yourselves, and I'll see you soon. I'll come back to you with Mum's ginger cake recipe. Mary will go up, and I'll sort out something around this Thomas Mann stuff if I can find it. Yeah. All right, loves. Sending all the best. Take care. I'll see you soon.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye.